Hello and welcome to The Breakdown, the RTE Rugby Podcast. I'm Michael Corcoran. Later on, we'll be looking ahead to next weekend's round of European Rugby with Aidan McCullen, and we'll chat to the man in charge of referees here in this country. But first, let's cast our minds back to last weekend's European action.
Gone back there now, Jack McGrath trying to help out as well as Leinster drive Northampton back now at an opportunity here as they break through the 22. Rob Kearney moves it inside and they go storming through, and Leinster have scored a try sensationally under the post. It's Gary Ringrose there, and there was a massive, gigantic hole in the centre of that Northampton defence on that occasion. Isan Atewa with the conversion opportunity straight in front of the post while inside the 22-metre line as they play towards the Barwell stand in the first half of this game, and he's launched this one straight between the posts. What was impressive also about Rob Kearney was the way he just drifted slightly to his left-hand side and they all went with him. And here was the sort of the swashbuckling run of Gary Ringrose to gather that one and score under the post. Leinster with the scrum, and they've absolutely mashed and are now marching Northampton back towards the 22. Here comes Luke McGrath, looks to gather that one because he knew he had a kind of a free go off it there. The referee was playing an advantage and he's blown the whistle, and what's going to give Joey Carby another little bit of respite here is the fact that it's Isan Atewa as the person who kicks as distinct from Joey Carby. So the penalty is for Leinster. It's midway between the 22 and the 10 metre line, not even 10 minutes gone, and you don't need to be a rocket scientist, Paul Grayson, to tell everybody who's listening to this broadcast that Northampton have a big problem at scrum time.
Big. There are more words to describe it.
I'm trying to be nice.
I know.
The ball is on the kicking tee, and it's Isan Atewa who will come up now and kick this one with the right boot, and he has nudged it between the posts, and he extends the lead of Leinster, and Ben Foden has to go chasing back to try and gather that one. Sweeps it back in field, taken by JJ Hanrahan, steps outside his own 22, thumps it up in the air. Isan Atewa comes in at pace, at least the ball bounces in the middle of nowhere as Adam Byrne now has to go chasing back to gather that one, and he comes now in a counter-attack from inside his own 22 metre line, and he belts two would-be tacklers out of the way. The referee's whistle has gone, and he's handed possession to Northampton because it's a penalty for not releasing the ball. Well, here comes Stephen Myler with the penalty. A couple of paces outside the Leinster 22-metre line. It's Leinster by 10 points to nil. And Myler with the chance to open the scoring for the home side in the 20th minute of this game. He comes up and nudges this one, and it's just crept inside. And the scrum is going to be to Northampton. And that ball swept in there now by Nick Groom. Louis Picamole looks to gather that one, leaves it there for Groom, pops it into JJ Hanrahan, races forward with that inside the 22. JJ Hanrahan hauled to the ground, 5 yards short. They look to move this one pretty quickly. Nick Groom had it there. And it's Northampton who have it now, right in front of the Leinster post. The referee is playing penalty advantage. He's allowed play to continue on. Groom sweeps it away to the right-hand side. Hanrahan moves it out, far side of the pitch, and they go charging through and get in for the try across on that far side of the pitch. And it was the replacement to Asi Tuala, I think, who's got in for the try across on that far side. An exquisite pass, not once, but twice by JJ Hanrahan, and that try is scored across on that far side. Here comes Stephen Myler with the conversion opportunity from outside the 22-metre line. Five in from the touchline, across on that far side. 6 minutes gone, second half. And Stephen Myler with the chance to add the additional 2 points after that try by Asi Tuala. And Stephen Myler, whose kick actually started off the movement. It's ironic that he's the man who's just nudged it straight between the posts. 10 points each. And available here now in a midfield position, and a good sort of a manly battle for the ball between two fellas in the centre of the field there as Devon Toner looks to gather that one now. He carries it there over the 10-metre line. Referee's whistle has gone, and he's penalised Northampton for being off their feet. And the penalty will be for Leinster, shy of the 10-metre line across on that far side. And Isan Atewa now walking up. He's got the ball in hand, and he is about 10 metres in from the touchline across on the far side of the pitch. 10 points each. Isan Atewa with the kick, thumps this one towards the post, is dropping very close towards the post. It is dropped just over the post. I tell you what, it probably even scrope off the paint to get over the post, but considering the wind that is blowing across on that far side of the pitch, that is some kick from Isan Atewa.
What a shot, drove it low into the wind, low spin, low height, and it had absolutely nothing to spare.
Dylan Hartley onto the pitch the England captain for Northampton, and certainly he will be is a massively powerful scrummager, but I don't really think that he's the man who's going to solve the problems, because it's the fellas in jerseys 1 and 3 are the fellas who are under pressure. They have control of it now, 5 metres short of the line. Fair play to Northampton, they've stopped Luke McGrath, and a sniping run goes forward with that one, stopped about a yard short of the line. They look to try and retrieve that one pretty quickly. Devin Toner acting as a temporary scrum half, or even a decoy, as Leinster get in and crash over. That is incredible leg drive and upper body strength, as the Leinster player got through a sea of bodies and got the touchdown, and Leinster in for the try. And Sean O'Brien with the try. Here comes Isa Natewa with the conversion opportunity inside the 22, and he splits the post, and you're in a situation now where we've played 17 minutes of the second half of this game, and it's double scores by 20 points to 10. Ross Byrne moves it back into Northampton now, putting pressure on Leinster, and they have to. It's Leinster by 20 points to 10. 57 and a half minutes gone here. Referee's whistle is gone. Northampton imploding, to be perfectly fair about it, in the last couple of moments. Not rolling away. And an offside decision there against Temaina Harrison, and a penalty for Leinster midway between their own 22 and the 10-metre line.
You can sense that Northampton are going to go on solo missions, one guy at once. There's no cohesion, really.
Concern for Leinster now, because Sean O'Brien is being checked across on that far side of the pitch, midway between the 22 and the 10-metre line, across on that far side. A swinging arm by one of the Northampton players inside there. I don't know if he's made connection, but if he has, Sean O'Brien is there. Oh, that's nasty. Is that Dylan Hartley? Across on that far side, is that Dylan Hartley? And he's only on the pitch. So Jerome Garza is over. He's seen it. We've seen a replay. A swinging arm by Dylan Hartley, who's practically warm on the pitch. The referee is walking back now, Jerome Garces, and the referee has taken out a red card. He's got the red card in his hand, and Dylan Hartley is sent off the field of play. He's been on the pitch 5 minutes. 57 minutes, 52 seconds gone. Dylan Hartley sent off. Eddie Jones has flashed up on the big screen, and I'll tell you something, I don't know what colour his face was when he came to the match, but he's as pale as the bark will stand away to our left-hand side. But that was a swinging arm by Dylan Hartley, sent off, and rightly so by Jerome Garces. Here comes James Tracy, recent Irish international from the November series, with the line-out throw for Leinster on this near side of the pitch now, and they go towards the tail end. It's well taken by Jamie Heaslip, and Leinster now quite firm in their resolve and trying to shunt Northampton back inside the 22-metre line. Available here now as the ball is swept out now to Ross Byrne. Crossfield kick on the far side of the pitch, and they look to get at that one, and they have done so and scored the try on the far side of the pitch. It's Rory O'Loughlin, I think, who's actually gone steaming up there across on that far side. And Northampton were looking at the ball sailing through the air as if it was Halley's Comet that was falling from the sky, and that ball has dropped across on that far side of the pitch, and it is Rory O'Loughlin who's got the try for Leinster. Northampton kind of busy about themselves now with five and a bit minutes remaining, but Leinster have turned it over. They move it across far side of the pitch now, and there's a chance as they go charging towards the 22. Across on the far side of the pitch, escaped his man. Jemison Gibson-Park gets around three of them and skipped around, and Jemison Gibson-Park has scored the most incredible try, dancing on the touchline. He's a fellow who could dance with three people at the one time. Across on that far side of the pitch, skipped around some would-be tacklers, not alone that, but had the presence of mind to come around and score under the posts, and Leinster have got their fourth try. Isa Natewa with the conversion. It is Leinster by 32 points to 10. Leinster now move it out wide, taken here by Ringrose, pops it out to Isa Natewa, spots a gap. Ah, that's another high challenge on Isa Natewa, and it is
George Peasy, I think it
George
was.
Peasy with the high neck challenge there on Isa Natewa. The touch judge's flag out like a rocket. It's a yellow card, and I tell you what, that's a fortunate yellow card for him, to be perfectly fair about it. The ball swept out across far side. Really good pass. Isa Natewa spots a bit of a gap. Goes for the line himself. Held up initially. But Isa Natewa dives over at the second time of asking. And held up initially in the challenge. But the captain led by example. And Isa Natewa touches it down. Another try for Leinster. And it is Isa Natewa with the conversion chance for Leinster, who lead here in Northampton by 37 points to 10. 5 tries to 1 for Leinster. and Northampton with 13 players on the pitch as we speak. And here comes Isan Atewa now with a conversion chance from the edge of the 22, and he swings that one. It's gone to the right-hand side and wide, and Jerome Garces, the match referee, has blown the full-time whistle. I was kind of interested to know what the reaction from the crowd would be at the end of this game, but that's a comprehensive defeat for Northampton, and a well-deserved victory for Leinster.
I thought we showed pretty good composure. Obviously, the red card changed the dynamic of the game, you know. But I thought we were pretty clinical then later in the game. Obviously, taking the chances that came. Obviously, we're pretty happy with the win and the overall result in terms of points.
39 points against Claremont at home. Absolutely delighted. You know, the boys put in a huge effort, and obviously there's a few scary moments towards the end there, but it's credit to the players. I mean, they were superb today. We knew we had to come out and get a bonus point win today, and we're, you know, absolutely delighted. Sets off the weekend for us beautifully.
Yeah, obviously we're satisfied, you know, with the way we played. Obviously we'll find some mistakes out there, but I think the most pleasing was the passion showed out there and the commitment and the intensity. I'm sure tactically and technically we'll find a lot of errors out there at certain stages, but to keep that intensity up against the teams like Leicester, we'll certainly need that next week if we want to stand a chance of beating them there. So overall pleasing, but not fooled by the performance and where we are currently in the season. There's still a lot of rugby to be played.
And it's the Wasps defence now that try and get on top of it here. It's gone back in an opportunity for Christian Wade inside his own 22-metre line, who tries to jink his way to the edge of the 22. Available for Joe Simpson, who gathers that one. And Joe Simpson thumps the ball into touch across on the far side of the pitch. And the match referee, Alexander Ruiz from France, has blown the full-time whistle. And it's Wasp who've held out, and perhaps deservedly so, based on the second half of this game. Only 3 points between the teams at half-time. 13 points to 10. Nathan Hughes and Rory Parata with tries for Wasps and Connacht within 6 minutes of the restart. It was 20 points to 17. Jack Carthy missing that penalty after 60 minutes for Connacht. It could have been 20 points each. Instead, however, within 2 minutes of that, Joe Launchbury was down the other end of the pitch, galloping clear of the Connacht defence. Jimmy Guppert with the conversion to make it 27 points to 17. And then with just 7 or 8 minutes remaining in the game, magnificent hands from man of the match Courtney Peel released Josh Bassett inside the 22, and he scored in the corner. Guppert missed the conversion, but it was Wasps who have held out for victory here, outscoring Connacht by 4 tries to 2 at the Ricoh Arena. It is Wasps who have beaten Connacht by 32 points to 17.
I thought the score flattered us a little bit, to be quite honest. I think we deserved to win the game, but to come away with the 5 points, we're really pleased, obviously. Seemed to foul of the referee. A lot of penalties went against us, which we were scratching our head about, but you've got to find a way really to around it. I've been saying all week what a good team Connacht were, and I think they showed today that how they want to play rugby. They really threatened us, you know, from the time they kicked off until the time where the game finished, really. So I never felt comfortable. You know, that's probably a testament to the way they want to play the game. And, you know, we know it's next week is... You know, obviously we've got what we wanted out of today, but next week's a different story, so we know we're going to have to be battered again next week.
Even at 60 minutes, only 3 points in it, you know, I mean, it was some game for both teams.
Yeah, it was. It was great, you know, great. I'm sure it was great to watch, really, for the neutral, and not great for the coaches, probably. But as I said, I never felt comfortable right through that game. I thought, you know, they had the ability, the quality and the appetite to score from anywhere, really. So, you know, we had to be on our toes and we had to defend to our best ability. I think something like 70-30 for big parts to the game on possession and territory, so we didn't have, you know, many opportunities as we would like, and, you know, we were quite clinical when we had the opportunity. So I'm really pleased, you know, the win, we would have settled for the win, but to have a bonus point win and Connacht having nothing, it's icing on the cake, but it'll count for nothing if we don't back it up next week.
And you've got to tear up your sheet of paper and plan and start all over again for next week.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's nothing today that we didn't expect. You know, they brought everything we expected, and they're going to probably bring it in, you know, exactly the same next week. But obviously on a home pitch as well, with that crowd behind them as well. And they probably ordered the rain especially, because I don't think I've ever been to Connacht without it raining. So, you know, it's a difficult place to go and get the result. But, you know, we're going to have to back up today's performance with another big performance and, you know, obviously go there. And the target is to win, simple as that.
And before I let you finish up, as director of rugby here, how pleasing is it for you to have a player like Courtney Beale finally on the field of play?
Well, as I said, I think his first test he scored, isn't he? So they couldn't have written the story any better, really. But he's been great around the place. It's really difficult, as to go the other end of the world to play your rugby, and he's done that. And then to arrive when you're injured must be really difficult. But he's got his head down. He's worked his socks off to get back, I'm really pleased, just to get him out on the field. That's what I said to him. There's no expectations. There's no pressure on him. Just go out and enjoy it. And I hope he's enjoyed it. But we could see what a benefit he's going to be to us moving forward.
Pretty deflated change room in the sense that we certainly feel like we lost that game, then got beaten. We had opportunities there to really put the pressure on, particularly around that 48 minutes to 60 minutes when it was 17-20. And we didn't take him, and we had a couple of tough calls against us throughout the game, but then we also made mistakes at crucial stages around at the breakdown. And so we're pretty gutted in that sense.
So 3 bonus point wins out of 4 in the last round. An impressive return, according to the Leinster and Ireland back row, Aidan McCullen.
Well, they were all fantastic matches, I have to say. Munster, I thought, played really, really well. Leinster were really good. One thing I saw, Mick, was the Ireland were bullying the teams. All the Irish teams were bullying the teams they played, and that was a brilliant sign for me. And including the English teams, where we would have been dominated before in the battle. And it would have been so interesting to see how we would have performed against England in the Autumn Internationals, because that for me was the standout test, how we did there. But I thought Ulster were phenomenal against Claremont, and that was the cracker of the weekend for me.
3 5-pointers for 3 teams.
Yeah, and it wasn't... I was looking at all the games and I was thinking, they built the scores, they built the game, they built the win. And, in the past, Ireland, if you go back 10 years in the European Cup, we would have got beaten after 60 minutes, where a team would have worn us down and gone, okay, now we'll send on the bench and we'll finish them off. They're on the ropes. We did that for the change. And we did that en masse across the board. I know Connacht went down, but they played, and they played all the way to the very, very end. And that's what was the really impressive thing about this weekend for me, and the future of Irish rugby.
And given the circumstance of Franklin's Gardens on Friday night, okay, the sending off was one thing, but if you look at the team that Leinster actually finished the match with, it says a lot about the talent that's there.
Yeah, and the strength and depth, and you can't but help remember the strength and depth when we beat Australia as well. Like that team and the strength and depth that we never had before, and it's beyond having the players. It's got down to the coaching and the foresight and the strategic thinking of the coaches in the provinces and the IRFU to go, we're going to blood these players, we're going to give them an opportunity. Coaches like Joe Schmidt, coaches like Pat Lamb, blooding players for the future that we can call upon, because those players would have never got a few caps even to get them into position to be capped in the future. And that's really paying off. That's forward thinking.
When you look at the game in Thomond Park last Saturday, a lot of people, including myself, expected that Munster were going to win it. I didn't for the life of me think they were going to nil the team that they were playing against.
Absolutely hammered them, and they bullied them. If you look at the technicalities of that, like the ruck time, the tackles, the kind of scrag tackles Leicester were putting in, Munster dominated them. And if you cast even back 6 months, you wouldn't have seen that coming. Mm. And they absolutely dominated them. Now, I think they're in for a huge match over in Leicester this weekend, because Richard Cockerell will not let them away with that. They will get a Hitler in the bunker moment for sure from him all week. I'd say they're kicking the life out of each other all week over in Leicester. And there'll be some bloody bodies from the training pitch. And Munster are in for a massive match, and they really have to bring it out of themselves. I don't think they will, to lay out my stall. I think they'll go down to Leicester, because Leicester just won't let that happen again.
When you look at the game at the Ricoh Arena on Sunday, yes, Kirtley Beale making his debut for Wasps, a star-laden team. The scoreline flatters Wasps a little bit, to be perfectly fair, because Connacht were hanging into that match for a long time.
They did, and again, you have to tip your cap to Connacht, because they held into that game. They didn't let themselves be bullied. There was flattering scores. I think Wasps should have absolutely hammered Connacht. If you're to look at that team, look at who they had on paper, look at the experience in the team, Wasps underperformed, and you know the coach will take it and he'll bag it and he'll take all the plaudits, but he won't be happy with that. That wasn't a good performance.
And we'll be hearing more from Aidan a little bit later on. This weekend sees Leinster hosting Northampton, Connacht entertain Wasps, while Munster and Ulster are both on the road. Munster are in England to take on Leicester, and Ulster travel to Claremont. Despite the convincing nature of the win last weekend, the Leinster back row, Josh van der Fleer, believes that there is still room for improvement.
Yeah, they'll be pretty fired up coming into the Aviva this week. I suppose the crowd's going to be massive for us as well. That'll help us a lot. And we got to build on that good forward performance last week. They'll obviously be probably disappointed with the way their scrum and stuff and their maul performed, but they'll be absolutely fired up as any team are after losing.
I'm not sure if you've had a chance to look at the match or otherwise if you had a meeting with the coaches. I mean, what have they been saying to you? I mean, you obviously don't want to fall too much in love with yourselves.
Yeah, we had a meeting this morning, the back rows had a meeting this morning with Stuart, and then had a bit of luck over the game myself as well, a good bit personally to work on, and then as a team as well, there was a lot of chances we left out there, and things we could definitely do a lot better, and probably things more importantly that Northampton will be looking at, saying, licking their lips, saying, oh, this is brilliant, if we do this then we'll score against them. So a good bit to work on.
Were you aware of the fact of sort of how inexperienced the team was as the match went on, given the attrition rate in terms of people who were out injured? You know, was there a lot more communication on the pitch than would be normal?
I think it was, everyone was pretty calm out there, to be honest. Like all the lads, like Ross, the likes of Ross Byrne, Adam Byrne, Roy Lachlan, the younger lads, they've played and performed at Pro 12 level, and they're really good players. They were very, very comfortable out there. I didn't think we felt inexperienced at all, even though maybe on paper we were quite inexperienced, but I thought it felt really good. The senior players really stepped up and really led us, I think.
I know that the players are pretty conscious of the support that was there, you know, and you saw that after the game last Friday. I mean, you know, what would it be like to play in front of your home fans this weekend?
Oh, it's incredible. Playing the ODS, playing the Aviva in front of Leinster fans, it's incredible, really. It makes such a difference. I mean, the crowd might not realise it, but it makes such a difference having that crowd behind you for everything you do well, and really picking us up when if things aren't going well, or if things are going well, it really builds the momentum nicely.
Before we finish up on a slightly humorous note, given the attrition rate with jersey number 10, if in the case of an emergency, could you play out half? Have you ever played out half? Have you ever kicked?
I've never played at half, but I played nine, so I suppose I used to play nine for a bit, but oh, that would be the dream now to be thrown on the 10 jersey, to be honest. I always dreamed of playing 10, but I'll be ready if I'm called.
And can you kick?
I'd back myself, yeah. Coaches don't seem to think so, but I'd back myself.
Munster, meanwhile, were convincing winners last time out against Leicester in Thomond Park. However, this week will be a completely different story for Razzy Erasmus and his squad.
Yes, I think historically, you know, I haven't been part of the history, but, you know, I just know Richard Cockerell well. I know the Leicester brand well. Our Springbok team has played there before and really got a tough challenge, actually lost. So, you know, I know it's going to be tough. The players know it's going to be tough. And Leicester had last year beat us twice, so they can't all of a sudden become a bad team. The coach can't all of a sudden become a bad coach. So a massive challenge for us. There was great passion, there was great intensity, there was some great execution, but you know, the reality is always with away matches, you know, you don't have that home support, you don't always feel that. You have to create that inside yourself and with your teammates, 15 guys, 23 guys on the pitch, you know. So we were happy with that, but our nice challenge for the rest of the season is try to back that up.
Three Irish wins last weekend. Can that ever be repeated or even better this week? Let's hear the thoughts again of Aidan McCullough.
Yeah, it's a tough time of the season. Like, you know, people say in business it's the silly season. It's the same in rugby because you really can take your eye off the ball. And with this reverse fixture, it doesn't happen in most competitions. Yeah. You don't get to play the same team back to back unless you're going from a pool match to a quarter final. So it doesn't happen, and it's very unusual to get that experience back to back, because you really implicitly understand the match you just played and you know how to play them the next week. You've got the reverse fixture coming in, as in the park you're playing the match in, and that all has a massive hand in it. Injuries play a huge part, the turnaround time, all that kind of stuff, and a team really has to focus on their own game because they can understand weaknesses or where did we do well, etc. But on the flip side, you have the reverse team going, we didn't perform well at the Rook. Say Leicester and Munster, which we talked about earlier on, those kind of teams, Leicester will look at their scrag tackling, their defence around the breakdown. They weren't good. So that'll be really good now next week. They'll focus on themselves. And that's all you can really do, is focus on your own game, knowing where you succeeded in the previous game. In the past, you wouldn't have had data analysis. Like, you have Mervyn Murphy and all these guys, and there are a few who would have looked at matches, video analysis on a cassette tape, and showed the players and go, look, here's the match we played 6 months ago. Now that's fast forwarded, where you're playing a match back to back. So playing reverse fixture doesn't have a massive impact, except in the player's head, because the player's actually thinking about last week, while they would have kind of forgotten about a match 3 months ago. And it takes away the effect of playing the match back to back, as it would have in the past.
And now, in terms of the way the games are set out this weekend, if we can go through them kind of logically, in time kickoff order, Leicester against Munster at Welford Road, and given what happened in Thoma Park last week, you'd be kind of slightly nervy about it from a Munster point of view, because like Richard Cockerill, his back is to the wall. The humiliation from the people in Leicester will say last weekend, bad enough to lose, but to be nilled Saturday can't come quickly enough for Leicester Tiger fans.
Absolutely, and for the players after the training sessions they would have had all week. I mean, they got bullied up front, which doesn't happen much in Leicester. I mean, that's one of their pride of Leicester rugby. And they got absolutely thrown around like rag dolls, and stuff, surprisingly, like line out, maul time, all this stuff that Leicester have prided himself in the past, that was all just thrown out. And Leicester will come out all guns a-blazing, and as you said, back against the wall for both coach and players.
Now, the game at 5:30 on Saturday is Connacht against Wasps. I spoke to Di Young after the match last weekend. He wondered out loud if, and very much tongue-in-cheek, if Connacht had ordered the rain for next Saturday. He said, conditions could have a big part to play there. Wasps won't be used to what's in store for them.
Yeah, I'd say Connacht are lucky they don't have an Irish water bill, because they have the taps flooding the pitch down below. But it doesn't matter, actually, at the moment. Actually, when you think about that and you think of the Connacht of old, the Connacht of today can play in great weather. They can play the great hands. They're the pride of Irish rugby at some stages, the way they can play. So that doesn't matter anymore. And I know that's probably a good thing that Di Young's saying that, because if that's in his head, he doesn't know what they're actually capable of, that Connacht team. And yeah, for sure, like, sports ground's a very tough place to go and play. And I think Wasps are in. They didn't play well. They did not play well in last week. I know they got a flattering scoreboard. They have, but if you look at the team and the calibre and experience of that player versus the Connacht player, Connacht actually could have won that game. And I think they'll win this weekend.
In terms of the game at the Aviva Stadium, obviously the biggest crowd of the weekend, hopefully near a sellout, Leinster against Northampton. A huge performance last week for Leinster. Northampton will have some players to come back. I mean, Kieran Brooks looks as if he may come into the front row. Callum Clark as well. I mean, will that make a difference? Because, like we've been talking, you know, some teams, including Northampton, were bullied up front.
Yeah, and Dylan Hartley's sin binning was criminal. When you look at a guy who's supposed to be a leader, that was so lacking in leadership or intelligence in any way. And you're a role model for your country there, for young players looking at that. Like, that wasn't between the line of aggression. That was just pure stupidity. And we've seen that so many times from Hartley. And that's the reason I'm talking about that, is that's reflective of the team then. Because the team lets that happen, the culture of the team lets that happen, the leaders in the team lets that happen. That should never happen. And that's reflective of why Northampton lost that game. I just didn't think they were at the races mentally. If you look at the early parts of that game, they got bullied off ruck time. Leinster were easily taking one-up runners and not always running good lines, like the one-off runners making ground, breaking tackles. And Leinster got their hands free a lot in the tackles, where they shouldn't have never scored tries. They scored them very easily. Now, I'm not taking away from Leinster, because I thought they ran fantastic lines, offloaded really well, and went with that game with a really good mindset. But they shouldn't have won as easily as they did. And I actually think Leinster will win the game again, because I just don't see Northampton bouncing back. I don't see it in their bellies. Don't see it in their eyes. So I think that's a Leinster game.
The game last weekend between Ulster and Claremont was obviously one of the games of the season so far. The reverse could very well be true in Stade Marcel Michelin this weekend in Claremont. I mean, it's one of the most atmospheric places, and they rarely cough up matches.
Yeah, and that is a cracking team. I mean, that was a credit to Ulster, the way they played that game, because and you have to say fairness to Claremont, because we always say French teams don't show up for their away games. They absolutely showed up for that game. Star-studded performance, and it's one you have to actually credit Claremont, because Claremont have not given into that mindset. And maybe it's because they've had a pedigree of foreign coaches coming in, foreign players, etc. The likes of Spedding and these kind of guys in the team bring a new mindset where, like, every game is a game. You don't throw your away games. They absolutely came to win and take their bonus point up in Ulster, and they played fantastically well. So that victory was probably the standout victory because of that. And I don't think Ulster can pull it off over there. I just don't think. I think Claremont's mindset, the team's culture is in a good place, and they're the kind of team that you look to in France at the moment to kind of go, they're the exemplar. They're the ones we need to follow the rest of France.
So a final question: if you had your Santa Claus money, are you suggesting to me that you're looking at a Leinster and Connacht win and Munster and Ulster to lose?
Yeah, that's the way I'd see it. Yeah, absolutely. Leinster, I just don't think Northampton have it. Don't have it in the eyes. You could see it, them coming out onto that pitch. I don't think that's going to change this weekend. Connacht, I think, will come out all guns blazing. Put themselves in. They always play well at Christmas time. If you look at the history of Connacht at Christmas at home, they always play well. And away, in fact, they've always caused some upsets in what was the Celtic League in the past. And then the other two, I just think they're up for too big a battle. Leicester will win, and certainly Clermont will pull it off as well.
One of the most important jobs of any rugby game is that of a match referee. Everybody likes to think that they know all of the rules, but honestly, I don't believe that to be the case. I've been discussing the subject with the referee performance manager of the Irish Rugby Football Union, Dave McHugh.
Every month, the elite referees in the country, which is our Pro 12 panel of 8 guys and 2 girls, Joy Neville and Helen O'Reilly, who are refereeing women's international rugby, we meet as a group. And as well as that, on top of the group, we have Jeff Blackburn from the referee department, Owen Doyle, and 4 referee development managers from around the country. And what happens, and the purpose of this meeting, is that we discuss current problems in the game, edicts within the game, issues within the game, and where we'd like the game to be going in terms of refereeing. And what happens from this meeting is that then from this meeting, we feed back to the rest of the referees in the country through a series of workshops around the country delivered by those referee managers in the various different provinces. So what we have basically is a filtering system from the top down, and with that in mind, nothing gets missed all the way down to the very bottom.
So there's feedback going in every direction, if you understand.
There is feedback going in every direction, and most of what we're working on today or hoping to work on today will come from input that we've had from Elaine Roland in World Rugby, from Joel Juge in EPCR, and from Ed Morrison in Pro 12, plus issues that we will have picked up ourselves as things we need to work harder on.
How difficult is it to be a referee these days? Because everybody seems to want to be a referee.
Everybody seems to want to be a referee. I'm not so sure about that.
I mean, Mike. The spectators.
Spectators certainly have ideas on what referees should be doing. It's different to, say, going back in the good old days when, you know, the summers are warmer and all that kind of stuff. But certainly it is interesting now in terms of all the technology that's available and all the help that the referees get from on-pitch match officials and from the television match official, the TMO. There is an awful lot of input that goes into the referees. But then again, it's still a very, very difficult job. I mean, things are happening so, so fast, and, you know, the game moves on, and players have become much more physical, much bigger, much stronger, much fitter. Coaches have become much more inventive in terms of how they go about their business, you know, and we have to keep pace with that as referees.
It's a difficult job for one person. I mean, you put in the assistant referees as well, even for those 3 people, if you consider the, you know, the coach said to me one time, you know, at a ruck or a line out, there could be X amount of things happen. For one person to try and police that is a rather difficult assignment.
It is very difficult, and that's where the assistance off the pitch comes in, or sorry, from the sideline comes in, from the assistant referees. They used to be called touch judges, and they're still called touch judges from time to time. But in terms of their input, that was changed about 5-6 years ago, that their title was changed from touch judges at the professional game to be assistant referees, whereby they could input to the referee things that were happening on the blind side of the referee at a ruck, such as side entry, hands in the ruck, that kind of stuff, which they couldn't do before. Before, they were only there to help out with foul play and stuff like that. But they have much more of an input now with referees. So you actually have, probably in terms of the officiating, a stronger team of 3 in terms of being able to pick things up on the other side of the referee that wouldn't have been there before. And then obviously you have the expanded powers which the TMO has now, as opposed to what he used to have. Before, you could only adjudicate on just try scoring situations and that was it. Now he can get involved in foul play, and you can refer tries where if there's knock-ons or if there's guys offside from kicks, he can get involved in that kind of stuff as well.
How easy or difficult or otherwise is it to attract people to come in to take up the whistle? I just walked past Frank Murphy inside of a former player from just a couple of seasons ago, and look where he's got already.
In terms of Ireland and in terms of the numbers of referees that we provide into the professional game, I think we're very, very fortunate, and we've always had a good track record in that area. I just happened to look at our national panel there a couple of days ago, and it came across quite starkly to me that we're very, very fortunate in that of 50 people, over a third of them played at All-Ireland League level and above. So in terms of that experience, that playing experience is very, very important. And we've been very, very fortunate to get ex-players, John Lacey, Andy Brace, Frank Murphy, Joy Neville in particular with 70 Irish caps, who's now refereeing international rugby in the women's game. It's great to see all these people get involved, having played to such a high level. You know, it really, really is good. And we're continuing to attract people from the playing game into refereeing, which is really great. But you know, to be a referee, you don't have had to play to that level as well. And we've got examples of that as well.
When you see someone like Frank Murphy, just taking him as an example, who's come through the system pretty rapidly in the last couple of years, do scrum halves make naturally good referees? Would Peter Stringer make a good referee, say, for example?
Would Peter Stringer?
Or you know, people in that position, scrum halves tend to talk an awful lot.
I don't know. I would have an idea that, look, a scrum half is the person who's probably most suited to go refereeing. You know, Elaine Rolando's a scrum half. Alan Lewis was a scrum half, I was a scrum half, Frank Murphy's a scrum half. So look, yeah, and a lot of other referees are scrum half. I suppose the reason behind it probably is, as you rightly say, the scrum half is kind of the fulcrum between the backs and the forwards. He's also the person who is most likely to be communicated to and communicate with the referee. So from that, you're probably off to, they're chirpy. They're talkers. I mean, show me a scrum half who isn't a talker and I'll say he's playing in the wrong position.
Is it a thankless job?
I wouldn't say it's a thankless job, and I wouldn't say it's, you know, somebody has to do it. I'd like to think that referees are an integral part of the game as opposed to being a necessary evil. I think that people who go refereeing and people who get into refereeing and really get into it in terms of getting out there and doing matches week in, week out, they really, really enjoy it. Yeah, you can come off a match from time to time and you can say, oh, I could have done better, or why did I do this, or why did I do that? But I mean, every day is a learning day. You know, no more so than a player, a coach, a referee is exactly the same. That, you know, if you walk off a pitch saying, I learnt nothing from that game, then that's the time to hang up your whistle or your boots, whichever the case may be, because you've just got too big in terms of the fact that you've decided I can't learn anymore. And, you know, there's always something to be learned.
It does appear, Dave, that referees are under a hell of a lot of scrutiny. You know, there's pressure from teams, there's pressure from coaches. There's like a referee assessor, you know, at an awful lot of the bigger games as well too. And, you know, the advent of video and television, that once it doesn't help, but that can add to the stress.
Yeah, listen, look, the guys are out there. They know what they're getting into. We do our best to train them to lessen the amount of errors or mistakes, whatever you want to call them, that they make. And hopefully, you know, what you find is you find the guys who make the fewest mistakes and who are the best communicators are the guys who referee at the top level.
And there is a chance for somebody to go from the start all the way to the top level. You mentioned Johnny Lacey there in the last while. I mean, he's refereeing in the international circuit and been at the last Rugby World Cup as well.
Yeah, he has. And, you know, and there's other guys who've gone through exactly the same. But we've been very fortunate in Ireland that we've managed to get guys through very, very quickly. If I just go back to both Frank and Joy, for example, are only refereeing two seasons. And I mean, if you look at Frank, he did his first Pro 12 game a couple of weeks ago. He's been added to the Pro 12 panel. He did under 20 international last year. Joy Neville did women's internationals last year. She's after doing more women's internationals again this year. So we can move people through quickly. But that's not to say that everybody develops at the same pace. Mm. Some people can take a little bit longer to move through the system, but that doesn't make them any better or any worse a referee. I mean, what we do in terms of how we put people through our system is we constantly set the bar, and the higher we put the bar, we challenge people. The more we challenge them, the more they step up to the plate, and we keep challenging them. And even today, we'll be up there in that room, and every one of the guys around that table will get challenged, because, as I said to you, every day is a learning day. I'm still learning.
And before we finish up, I mean, you know, we've spoken, I suppose, primarily about the whole professional end of the game, you know, provincial and upwards. The club game, the grassroots, is where it all still happens? I mean, do you have sufficient numbers to I mean, there are a hell of a lot of those matches on every weekend.
There's a huge amount of matches on every weekend, and it would be wrong of me to say that we have enough numbers. You can never have enough number if you want to service the game right the way down to the bottom, because where the game starts is at age grade. And we would love to be able to service every single game at age grade. Unfortunately, we're not in that position, because we're very, very conscious of that's where young kids coming into the game, that's where they start. And it's very important that they get a high quality of refereeing at that level. So with my development managers and with the guys in the various different provinces around the country, we pay an awful lot of attention to ensuring that they get a quality of referee at that age.
Don't forget, you can catch live rugby on RTE Radio 1 over the course of this weekend. Leicester against Munster is live on Saturday Sport from 3:15. That's followed by Leinster against Northampton from the Aviva Stadium at 7:45. That's it for this week. From myself, Michael Corcoran, and producer Andrew O'Connor, thanks for listening, and catch us again next week.